how to share the love.
The problem is, it's like, okay, now I need to go somewhere.
Yeah, once you have it, you're
right. Yeah, where am I going to dive around Nashville?
Right, so.
I want to go in the ocean and look at things, but I don't want to be where things can eat me, so I'd rather go in one of those, like, submersible bubbles.
Oh, that's
like,
the fun of it, dude. Yeah. I mean, sharks aren't going to really eat you unless you're just...
I've been snorkeling a bunch of times down in the Bahamas, not you mentioned, the Keys. Yeah. I just, snorkeling is fun because I'm close enough to the surface to where I feel like I can get some air if I need to.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Being that far out of the element kind of freaks me out. Like, second you go into the ocean, you're the bottom of the fucking food chain.
Oh, for sure. Like, even little jellyfish can just, you know, mess with you.
Yeah, right. They've got, like, billions of years of evolution, like, made
them
along there.
Yeah, every little thing.
Yeah, you got to get right up on the mic, man.
Oh, yeah.
A jellyfish the size of your thumbnail will put you out of commission.
Right?
For,
like, yeah, man, the box jellyfish. That shit's scary.
It's nuts. It's fascinating, for sure, but... Good old landlocked, you know,
Tennessee.
Life right here, Tennessee.
Good old landlocked,
it's safe.
Tennessee.
Only thing I have to worry about is a tornado once every 10 years or
especially
so.
Especially when you're camping in it. Right. I feel like we should tell that story. Maybe on the second half. We want to get our...
So, you know, when...
You have your handler in the back?
Yes,
your
I got
producer?
My handler.
So what's crazy is, you know, for those of you listening, we... do the show in Nashville, Tennessee. It's Music City. They say there's 100 people moving here every day. That's what I hear.
That's what I
hear. I don't know if that's true. Maybe it's probably an exaggeration. But we have one here tonight, a very recent.
Indeed. Out of that 100 people.
Out of that 100 people.
I am part of the problem.
No. Or the solution. Or the, you know, it depends on what side of the fence you're on the whole Nashville.
Yes.
The
problem is.
I'm positive about the expansion, so it doesn't bother me too bad.
The expansion's great. The when it comes into a problem is that who's moving here is incredible artists from other places. We're getting the best of the best when it comes to artists.
And
but,
me.
But they happen to be all dudes and happen to have... there needs to be more single women moving here. If there was 100 single women a day moving here, then I wouldn't be doing a podcast with my buddy on a Friday night. Oh, man. All right, let's start it. Ladies and gentlemen, guys and dolls, welcome to Share Your Buzz, episode 77 times we've done this in a row. So,
77s.
Oh, man. That's good luck, right?
That's 77 days I wish I could have back in my life. Do them all over again.
And now there's those 77 days that are out there in the ether of the internet forever now.
Podcast land.
So, yeah, man. This is the first podcast of the year where the sun has been out fully while we're still doing it.
I mean, it's beautiful. The flowers in the courtyard here, they're beautiful.
It's officially June.
It's officially
so June 2nd, right?
I don't fucking know. I'm on vacation.
So
I don't know what day it is.
That's right. You've been on vacation all week.
Yeah, I almost forgot about
I'm
the
surprised
podcast.
Surprised you're
it was
even
about
here.
3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was like, holy shit! I haven't done any research or anything. Like, it's in vacation mode. Like,
man,
it's bad.
I want to get into what you've been doing to keep yourself busy all week. But while we're at the top of the show, let's introduce our guest. You've heard him talk a little bit. We're going to hear some music from him later.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Donovan in the house. What's up, man?
How's it going, man? I'm Ben Donovan, singer and a songwriter. Just moved here a couple months ago.
Fresh off the boat from, you guys have been moving around a little bit.
Yeah, well, I was in Pittsburgh for a year. And before that, I was in Vermont for about 6 years. Originally from Northern Virginia.
Did this shirt come from Vermont? It looks like a very... like
I
feel like
came
a good
from
lumber
like flannel someplace.
Like it looks warm like I like
warm things, flannel
yeah
like yeah
flannel's great because you can wear it like multiple days in a row and nobody tells that it's all dirty and crusty and stuff.
So
you're
did
just
you
like naturally averse to doing laundry as
yeah,
I am,
right?
Right,
it comes with being a musician.
I love a good flannel shirt though, man. Can't beat it.
It's soft too. I love anything soft. And the older I get, the more of a pussy I am when it comes to my clothes. I want soft clothes. I want my jeans soft. I want my shirt soft. Like,
thread count, man.
Dude.
Right.
I want my
it's
sheets. Yeah, I want my sheets soft. Mm. Like, Chris 50, knows. 000. Look at even the shirt Chris is wearing right now. Like, soft t-shirts are where it's at. You got to get the soft t-shirts.
I want to forget that I'm wearing a shirt.
There you go.
Yeah.
Except I don't want you people to see my Potbelly when I sit
down.
Oh,
man. So I go to a hotel room or something now, or I stay at somebody's house, and they've got some plain old 200-count sheets. I'm like, oh, it scrapes my skin.
Like, what is this, Haiti?
Or, like, you go to somebody's house, or they let you borrow a towel, and it's one of those towels that it almost hurts
it
just
starts
to use it.
All of
it. Like, oh, my God. It's barely soaking up any water. Yeah, I'll just shake it dry like a dog. Just get that towel out.
So, Ben, I was listening to some of your stuff before you came over, man. And I listened to it before, and I just put it today. I had it on in the background, kind of like a bluesy, folksy, country kind of.
Yeah, I don't know. Sort of a kind of an amalgam of a lot of different things. I don't know. I read a biography of Graham Parsons a couple of years ago, and he had this term for, he called it like cosmic American music, you know, and it's sort of this term that encompasses country and folk and blues and even like R&B and stuff, you know. I mean, it's and you know, I mean, if you really get into it, like, you know, I mean, it all, you know, it's the series of tangled roots. I mean, you know, I mean, you hear, you know,
it's all American music, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you hear the same little, you know, you hear little bits of you know, little threads that you can chase across the blues and country and folk.
Thread counts. Sure.
Yeah, right. Thread counts. Yeah, so that's, you know, I mean, I think there was a little bit of that in, you know, kind of a little bit of everything on that record. It was, you know, there was some folk, there was some, definitely a lot of gospel, there was, you know, a lot of country. I'm a big fan of, like, 50s and 60s country, like the Bakersfield sound especially. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, kind of all that got thrown in.
Well, that's kind of the underground scene right now, right? Is that style, like, you got like your Sturgill Simpsons and your Chris Stapletons,
right?
Like, that's that style, like, they're paving the way for that style of music to come in, to make a comeback,
right? Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I've never been a purist, you know, like, there's, you know, there's some guys who only play Western swing, or some guys who only do, you know, kind of pre-war Delta blues, and I, you know, I mean, and I don't know, I always thought that was, you know, to draw lines and stuff, it's kind of artificial, because that stuff has never been separate, you know, I mean. You know, it's always, you know, I mean, like, you know, the Leuven brothers were influenced by, you know, bluegrass and gospel, you know, and you know, I mean, Graham Parsons was influenced by, you know, country and rock and roll and folk. You know, I mean, that I think those different elements, you know, have always been there, you know, in the really good music.
Yeah. So, go ahead, man.
No, I was going to say, so did you come from players, or are you the only player in your family? How
came from music fans. Yeah. You know, okay. Both my parents were big music fans. You know, neither of them players. I've got a couple cousins who are pretty good bluegrass players out in the Midwest.
Yeah.
But nobody in my immediate family really played.
So you moved away when you were 18, though, right? So.
Yep. You know, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs, in Northern Virginia, and you know, I just kind of wanted to. I kind of wanted to get out, you know, and, you know, kind of, you know, I'd listen to all this music, and I just wanted to chase it and see where it all came from, you know, because it didn't come from the fucking suburbs.
Well, that's what I was wondering, like, was there a scene or something, or how'd you even get the bug to pick up the old six string or whatever?
You know? I don't know, man. You know, it's just something I did. You know, I mean, I played in coffee shops and stuff in high school, and, you know, I got, my parents were always into, like, sort of like the country rock and the folk rock, like, you know, like the Byrds. My dad's a big fan of the Byrds, and Sweetheart of the Rodeo, the album that they did with Graham Parsons. And, you know, my parents, you know, they're big fans of, like, Emmylou Harris and Lucinda Williams and stuff like that. You know, for a while in high school, like, I kind of rebelled against that. I was like, I'm going to listen to punk rock. And then I got to be, I don't know, maybe 16 or 17, and I got real big into Dylan, you know, and
we all have our Dylan phase.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'm still going through it, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you can get lost in Bob Dylan, man. That's a whole different planet, you know.
I come back to him, like, every 2 or 3 years, it seems like, and sort of, like, man, this is some Dylan.
And, you know, from there, I kind of walked it back, and you know, I found out that, you know, I mean, all the stuff that my parents had on in the house when I was a kid, you know, I mean, you know, and so I walked back, you know, through the Byrds and through Graham Parsons and you know, Emmylou Harris and
I feel like Parsons was ahead of his time in a way a little bit,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So your parents might have been a little bit ahead of their time listening to Parsons, you know? Maybe they were, like, cool. They were hip, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah, man.
So, yeah, because, I mean, he was almost like indie country or indie, where,
oh, yeah,
you know, like, but it still had some success. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's true. Like, and Emmylou still sort of hung in there, too, but.
Well, I love that, like, I mean, the, you know, the Byrds kind of got, I mean, the Byrds were kind of hated in both worlds. You know, the rock and roll people hated them because they, you know, because they were playing country music. And at the time, that was seen as, like, you know, the music of, like, Nixon and Squares and stuff. And the and the country people hated them because they had long hair and they were playing electric guitars and they were playing rock and roll, you know. And
well, what's funny is country got all rebel and shit in the 70s.
Yeah, so right.
It's like, you know, a bunch of long hairs in the country, you know, so.
Yeah, oh, but, you know, but country's always been edgy, you know. I mean, you know, like Hank Williams is a, you know, Hank Williams is a punk rocker, man. Like,
truly. I mean, if you think about it, he lived the punk rock life,
absolutely,
even though he's wearing a cowboy hat, you know, like from
Definitely
Alabama.
Lived the punk rock life. But, I mean, just and coming out and before that era, before him, and before people saying things like real shit, it was just all crooning and a lot of, you know, love songs, things like that. Like, people didn't talk about the shitty stuff until someone came out and just said it straight. Like, people would use innuendos. I mean, there was, like, music in the 20s and 30s that was, like, very innuendo-based. And you could listen to some of that music from the 30s and be like, oh, this is pretty raunchy
for
the time.
Oh, yeah, man. There's
especially,
like,
the old black music from the 30s,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers didn't play around.
But it didn't make it to pop radio until country started saying it. You know, until white people started saying, let's go ahead and make it. Let's be honest. Until white people started saying it.
Yeah, well,
it took white people were square, man. It took and let's face it, it took black music to, you know, sort of cool white people up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been robbing it ever since. But they've been doing good, though.
Man, I do. You know, I go back because I'm a weirdo. I listen to, like, music from the, like, every once in a while, especially when I'm drinking wine by myself on, like, a Saturday night or something. Like, I will. Having one of those nights, I'll put on some old music from the 30s, like some old, like Ruth Etting and, you know, just all that stuff. And the Andrews Sisters, like that. It's fucking awesome. And you listen to those songs and the chord progressions, the melodies, and you're like, oh, like this is from the 30s and people are still ripping this off.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
People, everything that we sing, that we do now, is comes from that old, those, I mean, even the lyrics, the lyrics were so much better than anything that I can come up with now.
Well, they were just very straightforward, and, like, shit nowadays is so damn ambiguous.
Yeah, but it was poetry. Like, they made it, because they were the first ones doing it, so it wasn't cliche yet. So there was, like, it's poetry, and it made, everything rhymed, and it made sense, and it was, like, what a song is supposed to be, and little inner rhymes and innuendos.
Yes, because that's back when you had a lyricist, and then you had the musicians. Like, they worked together. It's like, you know, this guy would spend as much time working on the lyrics and writing this fucking beautiful lyric, you know, as the musician. You know what I mean? Like, nowadays, I mean, we do it. Everybody doesn't play. I play music too. So you do. It's like, sometimes you get this mood from the music you're playing, and obviously it'll influence how you're writing lyrics, and the song will influence how you lay in the lyrics. But imagine if, like, someone.
See, I've always been a lyricist first. I think I'll start with a line, or I'll start with a story, and kind of work sort of backwards from there, you know. And so usually when I write a song, I'll go through two or three different melodies before I find one that really just kind of works, you know, with the meter and kind of works with, you know, putting all the words I want to get into a line there, you know. Some people start with a riff or a progression. I usually start with words.
That's cool. Yeah, I know everyone has their own process. But
yeah. Do you find yourself being a lyricist, because that's mostly what I do as well. I'm not, like, the music kind of came second for me. Were you writing stories first and then pick up guitar, did you get interested in music and then want to write your own stuff to it? Or
I always liked writing and stuff in high school, you know, and I liked writing short stories. The problem was I was really bad at writing short stories, so I kind of realized at some point that I needed to turn them into songs if they were going to be any good.
Newsflash, a 3-minute song is the ultimate short story.
True. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah. No, that's cool, man. For me, music came second. Like, and I only learned how to play music because I already had all these lyrics to songs that I couldn't play to. So I was like, I should learn how to play guitar so I can actually sing these myself.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's cool, man.
Yeah. Why are you looking at me like that?
It's weird because you guys are lyric. I've always been music first, so it's like a different mindset, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah.
See, I'm not as smart as you guys. So for me, it's like, I'm thinking timings, and I'm a drummer. So it's like, when I do play guitar, it's like, I write the song first, and then sometimes I'll come up with a great verse, but I always get fucked on the chorus. You know what I mean? Like, it's interesting. Like, I don't know.
I think that's why I butt heads with producers so much, because I'm like, no, man, the lyric. And he's like, but yeah, with the music. And I'm like, no, man, the lyric. What about you, man? So the stuff that we've heard of yours, you was that the SoundCloud link you sent me?
Yeah.
I was listening to that all day, man. It was pretty awesome. But cool, so man. That's how'd that process go, putting that together, and who you work with on that?
Well, so I was going to school at the University of Vermont in Burlington, and I was playing with a band. We're playing country and gospel standards mostly, and some of my originals, and I sort of barely graduated college, and
did better than me.
Yeah, I hung around Burlington for a couple of years after that,
the Coat Factory,
Burlington, Vermont. It's a town of about 40,000 people in Vermont, and so I had a band. It was Reverend Ben Donovan and the Congregation, which is kind of a mouthful. Yeah,
cool,
yeah. We're playing around in bars and stuff, and I was writing a lot, and I had all these originals, and I figured, at least before I leave, I have to, I kind of have to make this record. So a buddy of mine, Jer Coons, who owns a studio in Burlington, he said, come up here and we'll make the record. He has a studio. It's just two rooms, right above a bar and across the street from a divorce court. And so I got the band in there. It was like the
set up for country music then.
Yeah, right. and it was the middle of winter. It was like late December. It was like -30 degrees outside. And we just holed up in there for 2 days and pretty much banged out the whole record. We play a couple songs. We tracked almost everything live. We overdubbed solos and stuff, like the fiddle and lead guitar and piano. But we tracked most everything else live. And we'd track a couple songs, go downstairs, have a drink, come back up, track a couple songs, and kind of just played all night and did it in about 18 hours.
No shit.
And
how many people you had playing on that?
It was six people in the band. We brought one more guy in. His name's Brett Lanier. He's one of the best steel players I've ever heard. He's a Vermont guy. We had him kind of brought him in after the fact to track some pedal steel and some lead guitar. But we got six people on the record.
Now, I love the fact that you tracked it live, because that's old school Waylon Jennings shit, man. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a main room and then a control room, and the control room had a big bay window. And so we stuck. I was in the control room with the producer just so we could isolate the guitar sound. I just kind of had a line of sight through the window so I could see the drummer and the bass player. And that's how we did it.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man.
I love being in the studio, but it could be tedious, especially for a writer who has to sit there and watch every instrument play. Like, even setting up for like a live show, I've never done that many live shows, but even when you are, Chris will tell you more than I can. But maybe you can explain this to me, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Does the drummer actually take pride in how long they can sound check every single drum on the
not at all. Right. To be honest with you, I hate sound checking, because then it makes me realize how out of tune my drum set is. I try to get it done as soon as possible, but generally speaking, like half of the shows I play, I don't even get a sound check. A lot of these shows you will play.
Oh yeah, just line check in. Yeah,
The first band will do their sound check, and then they'll just kind of adjust from there on out, you know.
Yeah.
Or the headlining band sound checks.
Yeah.
And then they adjust from there on out. But I do like recording live, though. I've done several live recordings. You know, it's fun. It creates a certain
energy. Yeah, exactly. You don't kind of lose. You don't kind of lose the mojo by turning it into science. You sort of keep a little bit of the art.
Yeah.
A little bit of spontaneity.
You just said it right there, because I've been saying this for a while, and we have some of the best musicians in the world here in Nashville, the best studio musicians in the world. The problem is that they're so good that it becomes math instead of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and don't get me wrong. There's definitely a flaw or two on the record, but I think that's it's part of I think recording is kind of about sort of capturing a moment, and that doesn't mean do it sloppy, but it means as much kind of you ought to keep as much of the spontaneity as you can.
Especially when you're used to playing with the same cats.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
There might be certain parts of the song that you've played enough where you're going to, you know that you speed up a little bit in this part and you slow down a little bit when you get back to the chorus or something like that. Like, you can adjust those little tempo changes with the people you play with all the time.
Well, you know,
whereas if you're playing with a studio musician, they're gonna be so mathematically on point.
Well, you're going to be on a click track anyway, so it doesn't matter. So click track will rob like a good 10% of the feel of the song.
We got lucky, man. We had this drummer, a guy named Sean Priest, who I am trying to get to move down here. I'm trying to work on him. But he's a New Englander, and so I don't know if I'll ever get him to move down south. But this guy is just a machine. I mean, we'd play a 5-minute song with no click track, and we'd go back over it, and he was at the exact same beats per minute at the end of the song as he was at the start. Like, the dude's an android. It's crazy.
I'm not that good.
Fucking Terminator.
I can tell you what, I can keep a pretty steady beat, but there's, yeah, every once in a while, because, you know, certain songs, you know this, like if you hit a bridge or something,
sure,
a tempo change, naturally you'll lose a second or
sure,
two.
Sure, yeah.
If that guy's that on point, kudos to him. Come on down to Nashville. You might make some money, dude.
That's what I've been telling him, man. So now you hear it, Sean.
From a real Nashvillian.
Sort of.
The truth, man. Because I've recorded both ways. You know how it is with the click. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's nice to have that click sometimes because you know it's always going to be.
But it's just so abrasive. Yeah. Like it just grates on you, you know?
Yeah.
It's like fingernails on a chalkboard. Mm-hmm.
So what do you prefer, man? You like cutting stuff in the studio or doing live shows?
Oh, I mean, I've always liked playing live. You know, I mean, recording is kind of a necessary evil, you know, just to get your stuff out there and to have something, you know, to have something on record, you know, I mean, to, you know, like I said, capture a moment, you know, but there's nothing like playing live, man.
You know what? I guarantee you won't forget those 18 hours in that studio, though.
Oh, hell no.
There's something about being cooped up in a studio with your buddies, having some drinks.
There's a little bit where it gets a little hazy, whiskey-induced fog.
Somewhere around hour 14, 15,
yeah,
you're like,
right. Around 3, 4 in the morning, you know, the substances kind of took hold. But no, I mean, I get what you mean. It's, you know, I mean, just being in there with, you know, being in there with your best friends, hold up in the middle of winter when it's negative 30 degrees outside, you know.
Only thing better is being in a woman's arms, really. But, you know, so if you can get that too, then.
Damn, Chris, you got something you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Cold up, hold up with a nice high. But I was just saying, speaking of drummers, though, like, shit, wait, I forgot my damn point. You got me thinking about.
Well, why you remember your point? I'll ask you, the reason I asked that last question was because I've met some cats that were like, man, I really like being in the studio. You know, some people don't get off on the crowd reaction like other people do. Some people prefer, some people are more about like the, I want to get, like they like toying around with stuff. I want to get in the studio, like I want to master this,
like
I want to play with this.
Yeah,
like I want to see how I can make this sound and all that stuff. And that's fine too, but I'm with you, man. I've always enjoyed a live performance.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's nothing like it. It's kind of great. I don't know. I've always seen, you know, I mean, music as like a communal thing. You know, I mean, like people come out to hear live music, you know, because like they're, you know, they've got a hole they want to fill. You know, they've got something that's missing. You know, and your job is to help them with that. You know, I mean, like, you know, what. You know, you go to a bar to see a show because you worked all week and, you know, you're pissed off and you want to just unload, man, and get loose and have a couple drinks and dance and hear some music. And so it's great to, you know, to be a part of that, to be a, you know, I mean, it's almost like being a doctor and making somebody better.
Indeed.
You know?
So is it the, I guess this is an obvious question. It's probably a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but is it the crowd reaction? Like the, like any artist wants validation. And to get the party hype, to know that you're upstate, that you're on the stage making everybody kind of party, but how is it like? What's the? I guess I don't know. What am I trying to ask here? Like I've known so many performers in this town.
You're talking about where he gets his kicks.
Is it more of the audience looking back at you, like getting hype, or is it more of like you just enjoy the performing aspect, like putting on the show, or?
I'd say it's more the latter. I mean, I think it really does become this sort of positive feedback loop. You know, I mean, people are enjoying it, which makes me enjoy it more. You know, and if the people on stage are enjoying it, the crowd's going to enjoy it more. And it, you know, to the point where you get locked in this sort of circle, which just keeps getting better. You know,
Ben, do you ever have those performances where it's almost like you just shut your eyes and it's just you, and you get a little bit more lost in the performance than you would others. I know I do personally. I'm just saying. There's times, dude, where I've played the entire set.
He's like, no,
drums.
Chris, you're a fucking weirdo.
I know. No, seriously. No, I just wonder if you ever get this. There's been times where like I've played a set and I've literally just almost kept my eyes closed the whole set. Just didn't look at the crowd. I didn't really look at the crowd. I just wanted
Chris,
to
I think
there.
Floating down the river in nature last weekend opened up your mind to some new shit that this you're getting super deep this
I'm just
podcast.
Saying. I've played sets where I've had my eyes closed at least half, if not more. So just played the drums. I know that's weird, but like. Sometimes I get a little more lost in the music, and like I don't even hear the crowd, or I don't even notice them. You know.
Well, I always. I mean, it was kind of weird for me, you know, kind of playing country music in Vermont, you know, because it's not a market that is you know, sort of particularly hungry for country music, especially you know, kind of the old stuff, which is what we were playing most of the time, and so it's you know it was kind of fun because we were just really Me and the guys in the band were kind of just playing for ourselves, you know,
holding your crafts a little bit. Yeah.
You know, I mean, we'd sit around, you know, we'd be sitting around before a show and talk, you know, I mean, talking about, you know, I mean, it's like, oh, what's that old Connie Smith song? Oh yeah, let's play that. We never played that before. I don't give a shit. And so, you know, and so we'd run through it in a live show and just, you know, okay, we're an A, like, here we go. And you know, and but I think that a lot of the time made for an even better show because I mean we were enjoying it so much.
I've always envied like live act bands like that can just switch up. You know, I've never been able to do that. I'm not that good of a musician, and I have. But like living in this town, like a lot of my buddies, I go watch them play, or even in the studio, or even no matter what we do, like somebody like you guys who can go on stage and just not even know a song, but just know what key it's in and figure it out along the way.
Well, you know, I'm very picky when I put a band together, you know, and I, you know, I kind of will only have guys in the band who, you know I'm going to be good friends with and I know I can trust implicitly, you know, like I would never have a guy in my band who I wouldn't trust, you know, watching my dog for a weekend or something like that, you know, and so I think that trust is a huge part, you know, and also being able to trust the musicianship. And so, you know, if I say, hey, I'm going to pull a curveball on you guys, you know, we're an A, let's go, it's 1-4-5, and you know, I mean, I'm not going to have guys in my band who, you know, can't hang with that, you know, and so it's, but once you build that, once you have those people in your band, it's super liberating, because you can just, you know, you can toss them a curveball, and they'll catch it most of the time, and if they don't, all right, fuck it, you know.
That's awesome.
They'll get it next time.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome, and not only that, but especially if the crowd's already kind of hyped into the song, You can afford yourself a couple of mess ups that no one will notice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've always thought, you know, it's one thing if you're playing like an artist gig, you know, like a, you know, I mean, like something where, you know, you've got a listening crowd that is, you know, that is there to hear you and kind of judge the musicianship. But, you know, I mean, we were playing bar gigs, man. We were just, you know, people were drinking, people were having a good time, and so, you know, I mean, if there's a mistake or two in there, you know, that's all right. That's part of the experience.
That's a good question, man. You've done studio stuff and you've played in bar gigs and you work down. You live in Nashville now. You work down on Broadway, so you know the whole, you know, the game that is just like making tips. You know, just play Johnny Cash three times in a row if they pay you $100.
Yeah.
You know, but so, do you adjust your show at all for things like that? Or, like, do you know if you're playing to a crowd that's listening? Do you play, maybe, do you feel a little bit more, like, put on the spot, like you have to perform for the people that are listening? Or, like, maybe you loosen up a little bit when it's just a tourist crowd? Or
I think there's different things that are liberating about either one. So if I'm playing an artist gig, you know, there's some of my songs that, you know, just don't necessarily lend themselves to the bar gig. You know, like I've been like lately, all I can write is murder songs lately. I don't know why, but like that's
it's
just
because
you know,
you're listening to your girlfriend's murder podcast. That's what
yeah, right. It must be. Yeah, right. Listen to too much of that true crime shit. but you know, I mean, all I listen to way too much Marty Robbins. That's like I gotta cut back on that. I gotta dial that down. You know, so if I'm playing to like kind of an artist crowd, you know, it's liberating in that I can, you know, I can play some of that and not have to worry about like, you know, people can't dance to this. This is not feel good music, you know. You know, so on that end, it's, you know, I you know, that's the upside for me to something like that. you know, if I'm playing a bar gig, you know, it's sort of liberating on the other end, because, you know, I mean, I can pull something on a band that they've never even heard before, and, you know, I just, maybe they'll follow, maybe they won't, you know?
Well, here's one question. Have you ever played a gig for two drunk guys in an apartment before? Because you're about to.
Yes. Played a lot of those. So.
Not my first. Hey, you guys want to hear a song?
Okay. Oh, yeah, we're on that 30-minute mark. Chris, you got anything else for this segment?
I think we got some good stuff for next segment. Let's hear some tunes.
Yeah, man, we want to hear some tunes and come back with what you got coming up in the future.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
So
cool.
We'll get a little off.
Yeah, we tend to take a break and then come back with a little loose in the second half.
Yeah, we just got back from camping. Maybe we can tell about some fun camping stories and some drunken whatever.
I got plenty of those.
Yeah, let's do it. All
right. this is a song off the record. This is the second track. It's called Mumble. It's about a woman who kind of mumbled at me whenever I asked her some pretty important questions. So I wrote the song about her. Well, this never was no storybook romance. That's what you wanted, I probably ain't your guy. But I'm getting tired of all your sideways glancing. It's about high time you look me in the eye. I don't care if you walk or if you stumble. When you come and see me late at night, when I say I love you, you better not mumble. Long as I'm your man, you better treat me right. Oh, and I don't need to show you off to my friends. They really ain't your biggest fans now anyway. But it's getting to feel like I've been sleeping with a vampire. 'Cause you nibble on my neck all night and then you're gone at the break of day. And I don't care if you walk or if you stumble. When you come and see me late at night, when I say I love you, you better not mumble. Long as I'm your man, you better treat me right. Oh, and loving you's getting to feel like Texas Hold'em. See what's on the table, but not what's in your hand. And it's getting about time you shut all your cards or fold them. Honey, I got something that you need to understand. I don't care if you walk or if you stumble. When you come and see me late at night, I say I love you, better not mumble. Long as I'm your man, you better treat me right. When I say I love you, you better not mumble. Long as I'm your man, you better treat me right.
I feel like there's so much new stuff downtown now that sometimes I just want to go do the old school shit. Like, especially now all these bars are putting like rooftops and second stories on.
Yeah. I remember Layla's was tiny. It was like the size, like, maybe twice the size of your apartment. That's it.
Well, I was downtown with a friend of ours. You know, I'll bust him out, Kyle. Like, he's been on the show before. We love him, but he's a trendy kind of guy, and I am too. I like going to trendy places. I like going to like Acme and stuff like that. But we were downtown a few weeks ago for something. I forget what it was. He's like, hey, you want to go to the stage? I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go to the stage. I haven't been there forever. So we go to the stage, and he walks like right through the downstairs and like up to the rooftop. Like, he was talking about going to the rooftop. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is cool, but this is not the stage. Like, I want to go downstairs with like to the
where
stage.
Where the stage is.
Yeah. Sometimes I do when I go to the honky. Are we recording?
Yeah.
Sometimes when I go to the honky tonks, dude, it's like
Did you see the waves?
I did. I literally do just want to go see the bands. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I miss the old school days when, like, you could go downtown on a Tuesday and it was not packed. You know what I mean? Now it's packed 7 days a week. But I remember you going on a Tuesday or Wednesday, you get to see these amazing musicians that are, you know, that are also studio musicians. And they still have that, but it's not quite the same as it used to be now. It's kind of sad.
Indeed. Yeah.
I hate going to crowded bars. I wish there was an app for, like, finding the deadest bar in town and, like, just going, like the bar that has two people at it and just going there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something to be said for going to a bar that's not too packed with, like, a good hand-picked group full of friends.
Oh, yeah, man.
It's like just you guys kind of owning the bar. Yeah. You know?
There should be, like, a Tinder for bars that is, like, match
like, find the least popular bar. Like,
yeah. What would that be? I think we might have just... You know, trademark, we're going to mail this to ourselves.
Right.
This is a good idea for an app.
Or a cool bar that just happens to not be busy. Sometimes shitty bars are shitty bars for a reason, you know.
Like, yeah, but see, I like shitty bars.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I like my shitty bars, too, but sometimes I want to get a good drink or, you know, at least if I get really fucking hungry, they have some decent to eat there, you know, like, I don't know.
I think we're in that medium demographic of Nashville, like me and you, Chris. Like, I like nice places. I can appreciate a shitty bar. Chris likes dives but can appreciate a nice place, so we complement each other well.
Yeah.
Like, we both like doing the same kind of stuff, usually. Yeah. There are some people that only like dive bars and some people that only like fancy places. And I'm like, man, that's like, I feel it's the same way I feel with beer. Mm-hmm. Like, I will, I enjoy going out when I'm in the mood and getting like a $6 glass of craft beer from a really nice place.
Oh, yeah.
And I also enjoy
a great cocktail. I've bartended for years, man. I love making great cocktails and stuff. And I really appreciate when I go to a bar and, like, a bartender just makes me a bomb ass.
Exactly.
Manhattan, you know.
Mm-hmm. Conversely, I also do not mind somebody handing me a Busch Light or a PBR.
I'll
drink the shit out of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Like, it won't the blue ribbon.
Yeah, I'm not a snob about it. Like, and I feel the same way about my bars and my venues. Like, I'll go to cinema one night, and then I was gonna say Melrose Billiards, but now Melrose Billiards is not shitty anymore. They kind of twisted it up and made it fancy.
It's like medium shitty. It's like a light shitty, you know. Like, it's the kind of shit you can wipe up with a one ply. You know what I mean?
Melrose Billiards, is that the place that's like in the basement with all the pool tables? Yeah, yeah. I went there. I went there a year ago when I was checking out Nashville and thinking about moving here.
And that's when it was still diving. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's a funny story. So last May I was down here with my buddy Cannon, who played piano on the record, and. He's moving down here in a couple months.
Sweet.
We were talking about moving to Nashville. We were kind of scoping it out, and we had an Airbnb for the first couple nights, and we ended up staying an additional night, and we didn't have a place to stay, and you know, so we're hanging around, you know, I mean, we're out of money, and we're hanging around Melrose Billiards and playing pool, and maybe if we play pool long enough, we'll find somebody who will give us a place to sleep, and so, you know, and it's playing pool and it's getting later and we're getting drunker and it's, you know, came to be about 1 a.m. We're like, this just isn't happening. No one's gonna let us sleep on their floor. So we ended up actually driving out to Percy Priest and just rolling our sleeping bags out on the on the shore of Percy Priest and sleeping out there for the night.
Sweet. Man. Yeah.
Yeah, that I think that leads perfectly into what we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we wanted to here it goes. We want to get back to our guests here in a minute. I'm sure you got some great stories to complement what we're about to talk about. But I can't let this podcast go by without talking about what happened to me last weekend. What happened to Kree and Chris last weekend.
It was crazy. It was crazy.
Chris convinced me somehow to sleep in the wilderness, which I was always one of those guys who was like, you know, camping never really appealed to me. But as I get older, I'm running out of life experiences to document and write about. And I want to try some new shit. I'm in a point in my life now. Maybe it's I just turned 37. Maybe it's like a pre-midlife crisis. I don't know.
You don't look a day over 36.
I want to try some shit I've never fucking done before. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go camping. I've never done it before. I'm good. There was some canoeing and river floating you know, as part of it, and I love being on the water, and I love seeing Tennessee scenery, so like, oh, fuck it, let's do it. So we get out there, the first night, me and Chris show up to set up all the tents, get everybody, get everything ready for everybody else that's coming out.
Yeah, because we have to, like, because we know it's really busy, like, so this is normally, this is the busiest weekend
Memorial Day weekend, by the way.
Memorial Day weekend on the river, so I knew this place was going to get packed out. So we get there, and we're feel bad because we're kind of holding up our claim. There's, like, people coming up. We're, like, got our shit spread out a little too far for just two dudes kind of holding a camp, you know. We kind of, like, spread out, you
know. But we set it up, and we go walking around. And I'll tell you what, it looked like a goddamn Patagonia advertisement. Like, these people had campgrounds that were set up, like, they had, like, boom boxes playing. There was like, it was like the club outside.
Glamping,
like,
is what the kids call it.
It
these
but
days.
But it wasn't.
But it was like, it wasn't glamping
not
per
so
se.
Much,
not
no.
as much
it
as like
just,
trailers and generators.
Just, they just had all the gear, like Dude. All the appropriate gear, like all the right stuff.
It was like Bonnaroo the first night. I swear, we were like walking down Shakedown Lane.
Dude, it was
everywhere you look to the left and the right, people were playing cornhole and drinking, and it was just
music
crazy.
Blasting, music lights blasting. Up in the trees, yeah. Like.
Somebody had a fucking light show, man. Like, in the, like, it was, I swear to God. It was,
and we're talking, like, at a campground down by the riverfront, like, on the bank. Just
like, a light show in the trees. It was crazy.
And so that was a lot of fun. We sat out there. We drank. We smoked. We walked around. We sat out there and just bullshitted. Went to bed. Woke up the next morning. And the rest of our party showed up. And we were supposed to go camping or on the river that day. And we saw the weather forecast was looking kind of shitty. So we decided to hang back. And have a fun day that day. So, I mean, interrupt me anytime you want to, Chris. But we sat around, we grilled out, we like played cornhole, we just did all kinds of
football.
You know, flew a football, little just hung out at the campground, just spend the day in the wilderness,
drink lots of beer,
and then about the time that the storm rolled in, we were like, we started hunkering down, and we're like, maybe it won't be that bad.
No, this is an epic storm, dude.
And then, dude, it came through. I don't want to. I think by describing it, I might not be able to do it justice because I am a couple of glasses of wine in and my words are failing me. But it was a torrent of epic proportions, if I must say so myself. It came down the
maelstrom.
The inclemency was just. It was a deluge, and it came in slow. We saw the clouds like, and then it came down real hard, and we were like, we thought that first wave was gonna be like maybe it. Yeah. And then it cleared up a little bit. The fire was still going. I was like, how the fuck is that fire going through all that?
Fire. You know you got a good fire going when you come down a rain, you know, a storm.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
then
still going.
our buddy was like checking the tents. Everything was good. We had our cars out there and everything seemed like it was intact. We were like, all right, we're good. We kind of felt a little bit more rain coming. We said we were under this like beach canopy, like, you know, the canopy you put like out in a carport or like on the beach, you
yeah,
set up
like
the
like a tarp canopy
tarp
kind of
canopy.
Thing. Yeah.
And we lowered it all the way down over the picnic table that we had set up, and we just sat out there.
It was about eight of us getting super drunk on whiskey, playing cards in the rain.
And then it came again, the second wave.
Dude, it came hard.
And it like there was a couple times where shit got real. We were like holding it down to try not to let it blow away.
Yeah.
And rain was sideways. Rain was coming in. Cars were blowing everywhere. Everybody was. By this point, we were through that ball of Jack. Chris was trying to explain to everybody how to play this card game, and nobody was listening because they were all too drunk. And Chris was like, "Y'all, listen to me, play."
I wasn't that angry, but no, I was just trying. Well, people kept asking me like, "So, what are the three wild cards again? What are the three wild?" I was like, "You motherfuckers! I've told you 15 times." Like,
nobody could pay attention.
No.
And we're all trying to hold this tarp down while the like torrent was coming through. The fire was still going for some, I don't know how the fire was still going. And I will tell you what, man, and then the next day, I can go on forever talking about how
you slept in the rain. Apparently, I let Tony borrow one of my tents. It's like 8 years old, and I didn't realize it was
full holes.
So, about we had another buddy with us who was going to sleep. On a cot outside, but since the rain came, he was like, "Let me get up in your tent." I was like, "Yeah, no problem, do whatever." So me and a buddy of mine were in the tent,
making out.
And I tell you what, dude, it couldn't have made out if he wanted to because it was so uncomfortable in there and gross. But no, we had all our gear under the tent so it wouldn't get. Oh, I mean, when it started coming down, everybody just slammed all their gear into whatever tent they could find. So nobody's gear was in the right place. It was just everything, food, just everything slammed everywhere. So we're in our tent. There's stuff all around us, and we realize that the tent's leaking, and the only warm part is like this hole in the middle, like where the hot ground's a little bit higher. Around the edge of the tent, it's just all water. Oh. So we're just like huddled, like back to back, because we refuse to. I mean, I don't know this dude that well.
He refuses spoons.
Like too friendly, like.
Yeah, so we're like, and then finally, like I hear him like rustling back and forth. He gets fed up with being wet, so he gets up and leaves the tent. And then I'm like, oh, finally I got some space to myself. But really, it was like the luxury was like 3 inches because it got anywhere. Like my pillow was only dry in one spot, so I had to fold it into a corner that was dry, and the rest of it was like squishing. Dude, I knew the tent was wet when I heard the buddy next to me roll over, and it made like that sound that when you step in a puddle, like it was like.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you just rolled in some wet ass shit.
Hell yeah.
So, dude, I can feel it in the morning. I was in a spot where this one raindrop kept on falling on my head, like Chinese water torture. But I was so hungover that it felt good. Like, it was like a splash of water on my forehead actually felt good. It was like, oh, wetness on my head. It feels so good.
No, needless to say, the sun came out the next day. We had a good float.
It was a great
there.
Fucking
Buffalo
day.
River,
there you
by
go.
The way.
Buffalo no, River. I got
to
check it out.
But everybody, the thing that sticks out to me about it, and I can go on forever explaining to the depth of the severity of the torture that we went through, but everybody else the next day, or everybody else, the buddy that was in the tent with me the next day, was complaining the whole time about how what a shitty night it was. And I was just smiling the whole time because I know in my head that this is going to make a great fucking story to write
go.
About. Like, you don't have, like, good times don't come without a little bit of misery.
Oh, sure.
You need a little bit of misery to make the best times happen.
Sure. And what a way to break your camping cherry, so.
Yeah,
indeed.
Indeed.
You got the extreme version of it.
You'll
so.
Have that. And I almost lost my car in Kentucky the other weekend. We went camping there. We went to Abby and I went to a land between the lakes, which is where the Cumberland River splits in two, and there's a big island in the middle. And land between the lakes is awesome because there's like a couple of campgrounds, you know, where you can go if you don't want to rough it too much. But all over the island, there's primitive campsites where you can just camp wherever you want if you can get down these dirt roads, and they have them marked on the map, and each road is labeled with a number, and the more the less passable the road is, the higher the number. So like if you're like see a road that's like 120 something, okay, yeah, I can probably do that, you know. And if it's like 450 whatever, you know, like you don't, you know, you're like, I need a four-wheel drive to do this. Mm-hmm. Well, I drive a Honda Civic which is not a car that's
everybody at this table right now is a Honda Civic. We all drive.
It's Honda a great Civic. Car. It gets great gas mileage, cheap to maintain. Not great for taking down not maintained dirt roads.
Sure.
So I got a little too ambitious going down this road. I took it down a road. It had
was it a two something or was it?
It was like a three something. Oh, and I'm going down this thing. And Abby's in the front seat going, I don't know about this. And the dog's in the back seat going, dude, I really don't know about this. He's looking at me like, are you fucking stupid, man? Like,
yeah.
You going to walk me back to Nashville from here?
Like, you know when the dog's scared. Something's
like, oh, yeah. No, yeah. He was looking at me like, I don't think it's a good idea, man. And we get down this thing. And you know, I mean, just like, bam, bam, bam. Like, that's not good. Like, you just hear things hit the bottom of your car.
Sure, yeah.
And finally, I'm like, okay, I got to turn around. Like, I'm... You know, 9-point turn in this thing, you know, in the mud and stuff. Finally get it out. And I realized that, like, I created these giant ruts coming in on this muddy road. And I'm looking at this road, like, these ruts are, there's ruts that are, like, 14 inches deep on this road. Like,
You're like, thinking, how did I even
I take it
in?
Once and, like, my bumper damn near falls off.
Oh, shit.
And roll it back and I'm take it again and, bam, 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 again, you know, and it's just like this is not good. I'm gonna like destroy this car, and finally I'm like, okay, like if I can get up between these ruts and these, you know, like these little narrow mounds of mud, you know, and if I can just get on those, and if I gun it, and if I angle it right, I can just stay on those things until I'm back on solid ground again.
Yeah.
And finally was able to just start at the bottom of the hill, worked up enough momentum that I got through the mud and managed to aim this thing perfectly, like over like the tops of the ruts, But yeah, I almost had to donate my car to the state of Kentucky.
Sure. yeah.
Which would have really sucked.
Right.
But ended up finding a kick-ass spot on the river, man. Lambton Lakes is a really cool spot, man. And,
yeah.
It just, you know, don't take a Honda Civic down a muddy dirt road.
Makes me miss my Jeep, man, the old days.
Yeah, if I had one of those, I could have done all sorts of shit, but I don't. So.
Yeah, for sure.
So you won't. Yeah, it's funny though. You said once you got out, you found a beautiful spot. Like,
oh yeah, man.
It's like once we got through the next day of our trip, going up that river was one of the premier experiences that I've had in a while. Like it's really pretty, really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think the highlight for me was that I almost missed. We were cruising along. And Chris was like, hey, we just passed a waterfall. You want to go check it out? And I was like, what?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yes. So, dude, we turned around, paddled upstream. That was a good find because that waterfall, that was a bomb. It's been a long time since I've seen a waterfall. There's not many mountains in Florida, so we don't get many waterfalls.
Yeah, it was a good three-shelf waterfall, and the sun was crazy. It was like there's huge trees out there. And the sun was coming down on the second tier of the waterfall and it's hitting it just right. Nice. It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah, man. I love camping. I hate going to like developed campgrounds like me because it's weird because I mean my job is to play music in front of people, but I fucking hate people. Like like I like them in like small numbers, like you guys are cool, but like, you know, when there's like, you know, 80 or 90 or 100 people, you know, the bigger the group of people, you know, gets, like, just the dumber it gets, and pretty soon they all got matching t-shirts, and, you know, and it's just terrible.
True.
So I like getting as far away from people as possible. I like, my favorite camping is, like, the kind that just is, like, sort of in a legal gray area. Like, it's not even really cool that you're there, but nobody knows you're there. Like,
yeah.
You know, like, I like to guerrilla camp it, man. I'm not a fan of campgrounds and kids eating ice cream and running around.
Sure.
And,
like, how do you even have ice cream when we're camping?
I don't know.
We couldn't keep a cooler full of beer for one day at a time.
Right.
I got some cheap-ass coolers. But I think we filled them up with ice when we left. By the time we got there, it was already pretty much
melted. Refilled. We refilled with ice every morning just to keep our food cold. Like, it was we were talking about earlier. We were all talking about it. Like, the thing I would do next time would just spend the money and get the better gear, because a lot of things that you're just going to spend money on because they have a name to it or something like that, but there are some things, no matter what hobby it is you have, no matter what it is you're doing, there are some things that are worth spending the money on.
Oh, yeah.
And getting the good version of them. And a good cooler when you're out there
is
worth spending the money on.
Get those Yeti coolers, man. Those things are clutch.
I mean, I don't know about 600 for a cooler,
that's but especially for one, like if you bought a Yeti big enough to put your beer and your food in, it's gonna be a good $500 Yeti.
You know what I mean?
Like, and those things are like 2 inches thick, so they look big on the outside. When you open them up, it's like.
But if it starts raining like that again, I can get in there and sleep.
For sure.
There you go.
And I'll stay cool all night.
We were in last summer. I was back up in New England. I had some gigs in Vermont and New Hampshire, and had some time off between gigs, and I was in New Hampshire, and so me and Abby were talking. We're going, let's go camp, and let's go down to like the coast, and actually camp on a beach somewhere. And
cool.
I'm looking on the map, and there's a couple of campgrounds like down on like the Massachusetts coast and stuff, but like I don't want to go to a campground. And so it's called the Plum Island National Wildlife Reserve or whatever. Mm-hmm. Absolutely no camping allowed. This is what I'm about to tell you. Don't do it. It's illegal. But it's awesome. We waited till dark and left the car like over the bridge back on the mainland, walked across the bridge and just hiked down the beach about 2 miles past there's like a gate they put up at night, you know, past all the signs that say like no alcohol, no dogs, no camping, no fires. Like,
you walk in with the dog.
Walk in with a dog, a cooler, a bottle of whiskey, a backpack,
yeah,
and a bunch of firewood.
Yeah.
We hike about 2 miles down the beach and get up in the dunes. And you know, I mean, you got to kind of keep the fire low and keep the dog quiet. But in the morning, you wake up to this beautiful, pristine beach that's just all yours, man. It was great, you know.
Yeah.
It was a very good time. You know, totally not legal, not recommending that you break the law, podcast land. But if you do, go to Plum Island.
That sounds good.
If anybody from Plum Island is listening, the views and thoughts of this podcast were not represented by the views and thoughts of Ben Donovan are not represented this
I'm
podcast.
I'm going to get a really angry message on my Facebook page from the Massachusetts State Police in about 3 hours.
Right. If you, first of all, if you name your place Plum Island, then you expect some shit to go down.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what that meant, but
whatever.
I just went with it.
So
have you ever written any songs or about being outdoors and nature and camping? And
yeah, not really. I don't think so.
What about if there was a murder that happened in camp while camping?
There you go.
That maybe
might have to write something like that. I don't know.
No doubt.
So
I don't know. It doesn't really make for a great story. Like, hey, like I went and I slept in a tent and I got drunk. Like it's it's just kind of, you know, it's not a particularly impressive story. It's just something you did.
Indeed.
You know?
And that's exactly why I liked that when we went camping, we had that drama with the storm. Because if it was just a regular camping trip, I don't think I would have liked it as much. I think I got more enjoyment out of the fact that some shit went down. Like, and I don't think I explained the extreme of this storm enough. It was like, this was a storm that, like, and I went through some hurricanes in Florida. Like, the big three that came through, like Charlie and all them. And this was, like, as exciting as that. Like, this actually got my blood pump. Not much gets me excited anymore. That's probably why I drink so much, because nothing gets me excited.
We were definitely riders on the storm,
yeah.
And it was great.
It was
riders on the storm.
I could write a song.
Exactly.
About it.
There you go.
So, Ben, what do you got for the last half of the show here? What do you got coming up, man? Let's talk about what you got going on now.
You know, I really don't have a whole lot of gigs coming up. I'm kind of focusing on writing a whole bunch right now. I've got a I think the only thing that I can think of right now that I've got coming up is got a spot at the Bluebird in September. I've got my schedule's pretty free for a while. I'm kind of just hanging, trying to write a whole lot, kind of trying to get enough material together for the next album.
Is that the goal, to put another album out?
Yeah. I'd like to put a band together and kind of, you know, find the right producer and put something together down here, throw another record together. In the meantime, you know, just writing a lot. I'm helping my buddy Ben Jarrell, who you had a couple weeks ago on the podcast here. He's putting a record together and needs a second guitar on that, so I'm helping him out with that. That's about all I'm doing right now.
Ain't nothing wrong with that, man. Putting the time in to make that you know, creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
But whatever you need to get that, the writing for the second album.
I'm playing occasionally on Broadway. Other than that, you know, not.
Well, it must be hard to, like, start up from scratch and put a whole new band together. I mean, I know you got your buddy going to play keys coming down pretty soon, right? But
yeah. And you know, like I said, I'm picky. You know, I mean, if I'm going to put a band together, you know, to gig around heavily, you know, I mean, I want people I can really trust, you know. Right now, I'm just trying to feel it out, find the right people for the next band, and kind of see what happens from there.
I was curious. You know, you said you like the Bakersfield sound.
Oh yeah,
and sort of
big
one
Buck
of
Owens fan.
So one of my favorite country artists, and he's sort of a newer one because I'm like you. I love the old stuff. So, but every once in a while, someone will surprise you, like Dwight Yoakam.
Oh, absolutely.
So
yeah.
I'm a huge Dwight Yoakam fan.
Yoakam.
I was wondering if you were a fan. So yeah.
Yeah, man.
Keeping that Bakersfield sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess because I got into country music as an adult, like when I think of Dwight, I still think of that as like old school.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, when did his first record come out? Like 90
like,
or 89?
Like late
80s. Yeah, right. So I guess now, you know, it's.
Well, he's past tense now, but I mean, still though, as far as like keeping that Bakersfield sound alive,
oh, absolutely,
like he definitely was, you know,
there is one newer guy who I do like a lot, a guy named Sam Outlaw out of LA, and his stuff, especially his first record that he put out like 2 years ago or so, it's called Angelino. That's got a lot of that Bakersfield sound on it.
Oh,
it's got, I mean, like, you know, a lot of pedal steel. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's cool because there's I do think, you know, I mean, people shit on country music and you know, I mean, and a lot of that top 40 stuff is not for me, but I do think that there's a renaissance going on. I think there's good juju in the air, and especially around Nashville, man. There's some really, you know, I mean, like I think that guys like, you know, guys like Isbell and Sturgill, you know, really have kind of paved the way for this, you know, this country music that's, you know, I mean, it's not just underground anymore. I mean, it's getting mainstream success, but it's not, you know, she thinks my tractor's sexy, you know, it's kind of smart, kind of roots driven country music.
It's almost saying that it's a revival or resurgence. I think
it implies that it went somewhere in the first place, and I don't think it did.
And well, it also implies that in my eyes, we need to do away with this genres of country music hating on each other. Like everybody's in this game, everybody's in the music game.
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
It's like we were talking about the beer thing earlier. Like, yeah, I drink craft beer, drink a PBR. Like sometimes I'm not going to say there's no pop country that I don't like.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, there's some good pop country out there that
I think Miranda Lambert is incredibly talented, you know, I mean, and she writes some killer songs, you know, I mean, you know, and there's tons of people like that.
She has such a classic country voice.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. And the stuff she did with the Pistolanis is awesome.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah.
Even if you do a different style of something, like I just feel like by saying there's a resurgence of, like, I'm glad there's a resurgence. I'm glad that style of like bluesy southern rock is coming back through country again. I'm glad that that's coming back because I like that style of music.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to say that because that's coming back, it's going to push any other kind of music out.
It's not like a zero sum game, man. I think there's room for everybody. I kind of compare it to like, you know, you got a strip of bars, right? And you know, like on a street, and, you know, I mean, some of those bars are full of douchebags, you know, but like it's part of an ecosystem, you know, like, I mean, the bros got to have some place to go, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like we all need some place to go, you know, and you know, if the bar you hate went away, the people who go there would just be in your bar.
Music.
I don't know if that made any sense at all.
No, it makes perfect sense. Like,
I'm not drunk, actually.
No, music doesn't. It's
an ecosystem. It
doesn't
know?
Exist in a vacuum.
Exactly. Yeah.
It everything and the same thing. And douchebags don't exist in a vacuum either. They'll be everywhere.
No, I think that there's room for all of it. You know, and you know, I mean, I got nothing against, you know, like Luke Bryan or Sam Hunt or those. You know, I mean, like that's like they're doing what they're doing and they're paying the rent, man, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know?
And I didn't mean to sound like I was standing up for pop country. All I meant was that. Like there's some, like, I think I'm a big fan of everybody has their place. Everything is there for a reason. And you know, like I said, there's some stuff that I like. Like, as much as when I used to write for the country music blog I used to work for, I did a lot of bashing on Florida Georgia Line. But I'm not gonna lie, I've got a couple of their songs on my playlist because there's a couple of their songs that I'm like, that's pretty catchy. I'll bob my head to that a little bit, especially because they just did a song with Ziggy Marley, and I'm a big reggae fan. So it's like everything has its place, you know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I mean, I always do in the back of my head, try and, you know, remind myself that, you know, don't be too like get off my lawn, you know. Like, I mean, like, you know, because there, I mean, every generation has had, you know, I mean. Country music has always pushed the boundaries and is all, you know, I mean, like, you go back to like the 60s and like hear what people were writing about, you know, about Glen Campbell, you know, or go back to the 50s and hear what people were saying about Patsy Cline. They're going string choruses and, you know, and I mean, that's not country, you know,
it's Nashville.
You know, Glen Campbell with this, you know, that big, you know, I mean, with this big country politan sound, you know, I mean, that's like, and you know, I mean, kind of every generation people said, oh yeah, that's not real country. I mean, you know, for years at the Opry, they didn't allow percussion, you know, because that's not real country. You know, if you got drums in the band, you're not a country band. That's rock and roll. That's devil music, you know? You know, so I do have a fair amount of, you know, get off my lawn, you know, bias sometimes, you know, about like, oh, that's not country. But you know, I don't know. Who's to say, man? It's a big world, and I think there's room for everybody, and there's room for innovation, and even if it's not something like, I mean, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I don't really care for Florida Georgia Line's music, but you know, whatever, man, they're making it and people dig it, I guess. So yeah, good for them.
I think that's, and I appreciate that, and I respect that, and we have a lot of people in here that say that same kind of thing. I just I guess I'm a little bit more hippie in my point of view. I'm like, yeah, everybody just love each other and let's forget about all the, like,
I don't know. I'm a hater. You suck. Get the fuck out.
I mean, I'm not gonna listen to your shit, but I'm not gonna hate on you. All right.
World's full of hate.
Hate is the answer.
Get shit done.
Hate does shit get done. Yeah.
It truly does. People are like those extreme feelings that people have. That's what gets shit done, whether it's love or hate or
it's like
I'm pissed about this. I'm going to do something about it.
It's that medium, though. Like, I have extreme anxiety sometimes, and I wish I could be more calm. But you know what? Anxiety gets the rent paid on time.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah, the one sort of kind of music that I just categorically will admit that I just hate is anything electronic. I just fucking hate it. I guess that makes me close-minded, and it's fine. I fucking hate EDM. I do. It's robot music. I've seen Terminator. I know where this. I know how this ends.
It is robot
bad,
music.
Bad fucking news, man.
That is robot music. You're
do
right.
You do not let the robots Zip take over.
That's the music that the robots are listening to when they're getting. When
seriously,
they,
man. Pretty soon, you're traveling back in time.
Grandma's Boy. You guys ever seen the movie Grandma's Boy? Have you not seen it?
Yeah.
Or what's it? He comes in his office and it's like this music's really loud. It's like this hard industrial electronic music. It's like, does my music scare you? He's like, it's like, no. It's like, well, what if you're a robot or something? You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just so funny. It's like,
and again, I just mean, as somebody who, you know, I mean, tries to make a living playing live music, it pisses me off that, you know, I mean, bars will hire DJs and, you know, and these guys will get paid, you know, they're scabs, man. They're taking work away from hardworking live musicians.
I have a soft spot in my heart for, I grew up in Orlando circa late 90s. So I have a soft spot in my heart for DJs. But the DJs I knew spun vinyl records. It was not all computer,
record. There's an art to spinning
record
records.
Player, players.
I've had a few DJ friends over the years, and watching those guys mix is crazy. But as a drummer, though, I do appreciate a good beat. But I understand where you're coming from completely. So.
And I totally understand that this is a totally closed-minded
view.
Fun
I just get locked in a room with crazy lights and be crazy drunk and just dance.
By the way, robots apparently are not that smart because, and I'm stealing this joke from somebody
just
else
wait.
That I've heard in the fact. But look, if you watch the movie Terminator. The robots that are self-aware, notice the planes they're flying. The Terminators are flying planes.
Right, so you think that
if you're a self-aware robot, just make the robot the plane.
But you know what else always bothered me is the fact that, all right, Terminator 1, right? He goes back to kill Sarah Connor. Terminator 2, he, you know, they send a Terminator back like 15 years later. Like, why the hell would you do that? Like, your one advantage as a time-traveling robot is the element of surprise, right? So why not send the second Terminator back to the day before you sent the first Terminator so Sarah Connor doesn't know you're coming?
Exactly.
Because then there wouldn't be 17 subsequent movies.
Right.
I'm just saying.
T2 was the best, so let's...
Dude,
T2 was a great movie, but like, why the hell do you give Sarah Connor like 15 years to like stockpile ammunition? Like, what the hell's wrong with you? Fucking Skynet.
Damn
fucking
it.
Skynet. I think the name of this podcast is going to be
fucking Skynet.
Fucking Skynet featuring Ben Donovan. Hey, man, thanks so much for hanging out with us.
Thanks for having me, man.
We appreciate
thanks
it.
For indulging my rant.
We're
about
running
Terminator.
A little bit long, and I feel like the longer we run, the more drunk we get, and that's not a good thing for
us. Well, we got to figure out how we get a hold of you, though, too. You know,
oh,
so.
Yeah. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/music.bendonovan. You can find me at bendonovanmusic.com. You can get me on Twitter at RevBendonovan. Instagram, same thing, I think. All the, you know, MapQuest, wherever the hell kids engage with people these days on the internet.
All the gramophones.
Yeah. My album is called Reverend Ben Donovan and the Congregation. It's available on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, wherever else you get your music online.
Say what's up at the door, Roberts.
Yeah.
Tell him you want to see him on stage.
Yeah, if you guys see a strapping, handsome guy... with a
Ask him where Ben Donovan is.
Ask him where Ben Donovan is. And I was going to go, he stole my joke.
You're too slow. Is that right. Nashville wit? It's a little bit too slow.
Yeah. Well.
It is. So we like our sweet tea and sports.
Indeed. And make sure you can always find us, ShareYourBuzz.com. Share Your Buzz on iTunes. Share Your Buzz on Google Play and Stitcher and all the places you find your podcast. And rate us, please. That's how we get everything we've done so far. I was bragging to our guests earlier about we've hit a high point in the last 2 weeks, and that's all word of mouth.
Yeah,
that's all.
For sure. Thank you guys.
In the last year and a half, we've gone from doing a living room podcast to with like a few people listening. Doing a living room podcast with a few more people listening.
With a few on location shows.
No, but we appreciate all you guys that listen and keep spreading the word, because that's how we get more popular. And by proxy, that's how our guests get more popular. And that's how we get better guests. We've been lucky to have the great guests that we have, great musicians, great artists, great everybody. But it's all been word of mouth. And if you guys keep on sharing the buzz, then we'll get... Keep on programming and more and more and more and more.
More, more, more.
In the midnight hour.
On behalf of myself, Tony, and Chris, and Ben Donovan, thank you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys, man.
Ben, you're awesome.
See you guys next
bro.
Week.
I got the idea for the song from a short story that a buddy of mine wrote. He goes by Hank Randall. He's a short story writer. He's got some stuff out. Self-published on Amazon, which is seriously worth checking out. He's a killer writer, and he's living out in California right now. But he wrote this short story. I just couldn't shake. I read it and was thinking about it for like 2 years, and finally, a couple weeks ago, I kind of had this story in my head that I kind of. Had to turn into a song, so it's called The Perfect Crime. Well, I love Liz McKinney with a love so pure and true. At 18, I went in the army. Around here, that's just what you do. We rode each other every day. Made every kind of plan. On my second tour, let her stop coming. Heard she found another man. When I got back, I just did my best. Fit in with the day-to-day. They had a nice wedding on the hill. She had a baby that made. I stuck around my daddy's store. I saw him from time to time. Having no idea I'd one day commit the perfect crime. We hear stories about his benders, about him slacking around the farm. She'd show up at the grocery store with bruises on her arm. I'd listen and I'd say a word, none of my business anyhow. Till the night she called me crying, saying, Bill, I need you now. Well, a knife was shaking in her hand when she met me at the door. And lying in a pool of blood was her husband on the kitchen floor. She said he'd come home loaded up and looking for a fight. Sometimes a person's just had enough. That must have been tonight. When we were young, she said that she'd wait for me. I
town like this has a lot to ask. She said he'd seem so sweet back then, when his mean still wore a mask. She said, let's run away together. We can just jump in the car. When I heard them sirens wailing, did we never get too far? Well, I walked down in her front yard as the sheriff pulled in the drive. I put my hands above my head, dropped a bloody knife by my side. They sent me to life in jail, and I made no appeal. And the awful thing that happened there, I never will reveal. Well, New Mexico State Penitentiary ain't quite as bad as they say. In fact, it's kind of like the Army, just the same thing every day. She's out there free and happy now. She still writes me from time to time. When they ask me what I'm in for, I just say the perfect crime. When they ask me what I'm in for, I just say the perfect crime.